Good afternoon and welcome to the regular scheduled meeting of Cambria Community Services District. We are waiting for one director, but I think we will start. I'm sure it won't be too long getting here. And let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
They threw us by changing the place.
Yeah, looks like the...
Get flagged on.
That's right. Madam Secretary, we do have a quorum. And is there a report from closed session from council, please?
We discussed the items listed at the previous agenda in closed session after the regularly scheduled meetings, and there were no action items reportable out of that meeting today.
Thank you. Agenda review. I'll wait just a moment in case. Yeah.
Let the record show that...
I just met with Chairperson Michael Thompson, and he said he would be here, so
okay.
We'll hopefully get down to that point, and he will be
right,
in attendance.
We can bring that at any time. Thank you. All right, seeing no changes to the consent agenda, we have no acknowledgments or presentations this time. Okay. We move to the Sheriff's Report.
Good afternoon, members of the board, staff members, public. Todd Steeb, Sheriff's Department. Last month's been fairly busy. Calls for service for last year at this time were 266 calls for service with 40 crime reports generated. This year we're up to 288 for the last month with 38 crime reports. Of those, we've had five domestic violence calls, five warrant arrests, five drug arrests, and just the other day, three DUIs by this department in the same day. So one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and one in the evening. So kind of a point that it's not just after people get off work. We are out there all times of the day and night, and people are still driving under the influence. So another subject that the commander wanted me to bring up was the driving without a driver's license is still kind of a top priority with us here in Cambria. It seems to be an ongoing issue. We're looking at some alternatives to pulling a car off the street every time we hook somebody up or arrest them for driving without a driver's license and tow their vehicle. It takes a patrol car off the street. Day shift, there's usually a car to cover, but at night shift, that two-man car is then off the street for an hour or 2 hours, booking that person into custody and dealing with the automobile and stuff. So we're looking at some alternatives to handling that. Last month, we had two what we call vehicle smash and grabs in the area. It was two separate incidents with two different kind of groups. One was a male-female. What they were doing is pulling up to the automobiles using a slingshot with ball bearings, breaking out the window, then reaching in and grabbing whatever they could. That we worked along with State Parks with that call and were able to put those two people into custody. Santa Barbara also caught a three-person ring that came through the area through San Luis Obispo. They were caught in Santa Barbara, and they have also been placed in custody.
You know, Todd, when I was in college, smashing and grabbing had two different meanings.
Right. The commander wanted to make sure that I addressed, if that's suspicious and nobody comes running, then they reach into the car and grab what they can, money, you know, binoculars, cameras, identification, things like that. So we have been working fairly hard on the narcotics end of our job lately. Like I said, five arrests in the last month, so pretty good for this area. Identified some residences and some folks that have been out and about in some cars that we're aware of. We get a lot of people calling in to Crime Stoppers, calling in tips to us, and we appreciate that. We want to encourage everyone to continue to do that. You know, activity houses, people coming at all hours of the night, staying for short amount of time, high rates of speed through automobiles. That gives us the ability to focus in on certain areas. As you know, we're one or two deputies up here, and sometimes we get spread a little thin, so it helps when you guys are out there helping us. Any questions or concerns?
Any questions? Yes.
We haven't had a report in a while, Todd. Is what you're reporting an escalation, or is it in greater than it has been in previous months? Or
with regard to the narcotics?
Well, the narcotics, just the number of the just the
yeah narcotics. The arrests of narcotics have gone up in the last couple of months. We've been kind of cracking down. It's kind of gone wayward for us for a while. We've got a little bit extra help, and so we've really been putting extra rubber to the street, so to speak. Mm.
Do you have any sense of why it's these varying incidents that are increasing here in Cambria?
Well, in this area? We made a couple of pretty good-sized busts recently. An incident in San Simeon where my partner and I got a 1 3/4 pounds out of a car, which is estimated street value of about $25,000. Mm. So you start putting that kind of hurt on those individuals and starts putting the word out.
More activity.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Sure.
So it's not a visitor-related situation necessarily?
No.
I was going to ask about the Bull Baron thing. Are those usually occurring in the sort of like the domestic areas like Lodge Hill and so on, or is it mainly in public areas like beach and commercial areas?
Good question. It's mainly happening in the public areas. Your turnouts from, let's say, Hearst Castle or Ragged Point all the way down the coast. Mm-hmm. Those that stop, they turn out, they're taking their pictures, they decide they want to go down onto the beach and walk their dog or, you know, enjoy our coastline. These folks just come along and take advantage of that situation. They see one or two cars parked in the lot. No one's around. It's an easy smash and grab for them. They just continue to move down the coast.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
No, that's Wayne Parrick, the committee chair, Art Montandon, the district council, and myself. And I'm reporting that we have made build-out reduction program presentations before the Cambria Rotary Club on September 1st. We did a more technical interactive presentation with the San Luis Obispo County planning staff and the General Services Real Property staff together, including Supervisor Bianchi and her legislative analyst, Richard Macedo. That occurred on September 14th. And then we presented an overview to the staff of the California State Coastal Conservancy in Oakland on September 15th, so we've been pretty busy. I note here the upcoming scheduled build-out reduction program presentations, one on October 14th to the United Lot Owners of Cambria, October 18th to the North Coast Advisory Council, and November 14th to the Board of Directors for the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo. I also sent an email this afternoon trying to coordinate a meeting with the California Coastal Commission, the staff, and we're looking toward a late October, early November date with them. And as soon as I hear back, I'll let you all know for that so that we can have similar presentation like we had with the SLO County planning staff. It was very well received, and we got a lot of good input from the staff, and we expect the same from the Coastal Commission staff.
Based on some of the things that went on, didn't you also go to the realtors as well?
Or? Oh, I had reported on that, and maybe I didn't last month. We had that earlier.
Okay.
And, you know, we have a list, I would say, I've said this at a couple of meetings, of about 20 groups. Mm-hmm. And they're within Cambria and outside Cambria, within the county, in the state. So I will provide you some feedback once I know Art and Wayne and I sit down and determine a realistic schedule. Obviously, it's quite cumbersome, but we've gotten it down, and I have to tell you, we've gotten some really good feedback on the program. We're able to respond to questions. Anytime anyone sends one to me or they send a group of them to me, our goal is to always get them responded to and post the responses onto the website. So I refer to anybody who might be hearing this at home or in the audience that the most up-to-date information with regard to the program, or if there are new questions that we've been challenged with, we post those immediately on the website. So, Carlos, you'll help me with this next little spiel. We have some congratulations to give our district clerk, Kathy Choate. She successfully completed and graduated from the technical track for clerks program at the University of California Riverside Extension Program on September 7th. Her coworker and colleague took a couple of snapshots. She doesn't know I'm showing these. This is her graduating with her certificate. This is a vocationally focused course. It's designed for individuals pursuing their certified municipal clerk designation. Goal to communicate more frequently with our customers. Therefore, we thought a more concise newsletter would be easier to produce and distribute on a bimonthly basis. And I'm encouraging everyone to watch for their utility bills to include these newsletters on a bimonthly basis. Sometimes they might even just be topic specific. This last one was pretty broad. I want to suggest that because some folks might say, hey, you didn't address any of the core issues or you didn't spend a lot of time talking about some of the project updates. That's because we're going to be sending out the Consumer Confidence Report, or as some folks know it, as the Water Quality Report, here in the next month and a half. And that's going to have a really nice spread on all of the up-to-date information on the water and sewer projects and some interesting updates on the desal projects. So everybody be watching their mail for that. It will be individually mailed probably in late October. That's our goal. Finally, the comprehensive informational brochure on the district's build-out reduction program is in the stages of finalization, and we anticipate it will be distributed by the beginning of November. And this goes to all customers, property owners, local and state policymaking organizations, and regulatory agencies. At these presentations we've been making, Art and Wayne and I have gotten some really good feedback, too, about what's out there as it's not necessarily a draft, but it's our first run at the brochure, so folks have probably seen it. But we're going to finalize it, make the print bigger. We're adding some ideas that have been suggested to us, and it'll be on a little bit more hard copy stock, and everyone should be happy to receive it. And certainly if there are any questions when it's mailed out, they can be referred to me, and we'll get a response back. Under the long-term financial management plan, next month is when we intend to provide an update of what's going on and share with you the project timeline. Black and Veatch is preparing to get ready to provide us with the administrative draft of the analytical work developed for the utility rates. It's very comprehensive, and all staff has been involved in it who are related to the utility operations and the finance department. It's quite interesting when you get folks involved who aren't used to this process, because sometimes, and even when it's presented by Black and Veatch, there are a lot of things to think about when you build a true utility rate. And understanding that we as customers and those of us who live here, we own the system, and there's a way that we've got to consider taking care of it into the future years. So that's how the utility rate model is going to be based. Besides utility rates, the long-term financial management plan will include analysis of the district's user fees and charges, the connection fees, and the overhead cost allocation methodology. Under human resources, I promise the board and the district will be fully staffed. All the vacancies will be filled. I'm going to just announce their names now, but next month we will bring them to the board meeting so that you can personally be introduced to them. Samantha Positieri is our administrative technician one, and you can meet her at the district's front desk. Brian Bodie will share in his report the news of their new operator in training, DeLon Blackburn, in the wastewater division. A new addition to our management team will be Alan Labossier. He will be our finance manager. His start date is October the 11th. Of course, that doesn't mean we're booting Patrick Bradley out. He'll continue to work with us for a few months during the transition and on special projects. And then finally, we will announce the new Administrative Tech 2, which is our utility billing clerk, next month, as soon as all of the pre-employment recruitment processes are completed. Okay, the next item under Human Resources is a report on the Fire Department organizational morale. This is the report that Director Funky Ballou requested during the July 27th board meeting, specifically what's being accomplished by management to improve the fire department morale. I want to report that in further investigating these specific details about any alleged morale problems within the fire department, I was advised on September 11th by the officers of the fire, those are the fire captains of the department, that there were no morale problems. So it appears that some of the district's fire department employees may have been discontented with the progress of the labor negotiations, and I admit that labor negotiations are tenuous at best. Each side, the management and the employees, have differences of opinion and are angling justification for their positions. From our perspective, limited funding was the major issue this year during labor negotiations. They continued through last month's board meeting, where the district and the CPFA, or the Cambria Professional Firefighters Association, reached final agreement, and that MOU was approved by you. I would, however, like to take the opportunity to share several organizational improvements made within the fire department within the past couple of years, all of which were to involve and motivate staff and to encourage a more positive work environment. Now, I'm able to give you this list because I have personally been dedicated to improving and working towards some of these enhanced organizational initiatives. We supported staff recommendations and obtained approval by the Board of Directors for the full-time 3-0 staffing. We recruited and filled vacancies for the Assistant Fire Chief. He's also the Fire Marshal, and that was the former Fire Marshal Captain position. Thereby, we presented an internal promotional opportunity. Fire captain, we did that promotion from within, and two fire engineers, good pool of candidates from which to select, and we got to hire, as I recall, three or four of those. Division of organizational duties among the fire chief and assistant fire chiefs so that there's a better blend of mentoring opportunities, so staff doesn't just have to go to the fire chief, they can go to the assistant fire chief on whatever his duties or responsibilities are. The division of operational duties and programs among the fire captains and fire engineers, whereby they were allowed to have the preference or the choice of what they wanted to work on, what their program desires were, and what their experiences were. We conducted an organizational development workshop for 1.5 days by external fire professional consultants, and that workshop was attended by all district or CCSD fire department employees and myself. The consultants reported to me on January 30th that everything seems to be going well within the department. There are regularly scheduled officers' meetings at which the general manager, that's myself, was invited to attend and to be there as a resource, and then I was bumped because the employee said, everything's going well, we can work this out, thank you for attending. So I excused myself. We included the fire captains and annual labor relations supervisor or management training with other district supervisors and managers to increase their working knowledge of labor laws, employment relations, and leadership skills. We involved staff in the design specs of the new fire engine currently under manufacture. Fire captains have attended the 2-week National Fire Academy in Emmitsburg, Maryland. In fact, one of them is either still there or on his way home. We have encouraged staff to explore work practice enhancements while holding the staff accountable for their program responsibilities and job tasks. Sometimes that's hard to do, and it's difficult to understand why, you know, we have to do that, but that's part of our jobs. We increased the purchasing authority for the fire captains to $5,000 to minimize what they reported as bottlenecking of the purchasing process. We encouraged a participative environment to become more familiar with the district's operations budgets, the financial policies, and we trained the fire department staff on the budget process so that they're more rounded and more knowledgeable. In addition, there are two monthly meetings that occur. One is a management team meeting that includes the fire chief and the assistant fire chief so that we can improve the organizational communications within the fire department and they know what's going on in the district. And also there is a monthly administrative staff meeting that includes their administrative technician so that she is able to bring information back from what's going on from the district from an administrative standpoint. In my opinion, these are incredible strides. I'm unaware of any negativity as a result of these accomplishments. I have to say that the department has 9 incompetent team of individuals, and they're very well skilled for the district. But as I've stated to district employees, and I don't mind stating publicly, my leadership style is open and participative. I always make myself available. I may not always agree with a staff member's position or opinion, but they're encouraged and welcome to professionally share their ideas with me and openly express themselves. However, as an organization, a well-organized team, we should always reflect a united front when it comes to our service levels within the community. I have a strong work ethic, and I expect high performance standards from those individuals with whom I work. These performance expectations extend to the employees in the CCSD Fire Department as well. So I hope that answers questions, or at least is responsive to Director Funky Ballou's request for a report on morale. Under Parks and Rec, Marine Terrace, Carlos, I think you have some photos of the Marine Terrace Trail and emergency evacuation route. We are extremely happy to report, and probably I'm not the best one, considering that Connie Davidson and Ben Bohr are in the back of the room, to report that the project is completely finished. It was finally inspected this morning, and I can't say this project had to be accomplished in record time. The district partnered with North Coast Engineering, who engineered and designed the project, and Union Asphalt, Inc., who constructed it. Ben Bohr serves as the district's field project manager, along with oversight by Fire Chief Bob Putney for the emergency evacuation route component, and Connie Davidson spearheaded the permitting and construction grant administration. We also coordinated with the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. This is a 1-mile, 20-foot-wide trail, wheelchair accessible, with 2 ADA parking spaces located at the north end of the Windsor entrance onto the western portion of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. The trail also functions as an emergency evacuation route between Park Hill and Marine Terrace / Lodge Hill in case of a wildland fire or other emergency event. The California Conservation Corps will add a segment of boardwalk on the north end connecting the Marine Terrace Trail with the recently improved Bluff Trail. We wish to express appreciation for the grant funding obtained via the Federal Recreational Trails Program, the California State Coastal Conservancy, and the park facility fees collected in Cambria by the San Luis Obispo County Parks and Recreation Department. The district's contribution was $10,000 in kind services for Ben Boers and Connie Davidson's time, but the total estimated cost of the project was $216,000. So once the boardwalk connector is completed and the signage is installed, the district will host a ribbon-cutting event for the Marine Terrace Trail. So the hydroseeding got done today, and since we got the two people who are really obviously...
This week?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Wait till you go out today. I haven't been out today, and they say it looks even better now that it's hydroseeded. Some of the comments we've gotten from the public is they thought it would remain barren, but it won't. With a good rain, we're hoping that that hydroseed will take and be very beautiful.
It's beautiful, and the vista from that is wonderful. So,
it is.
And walking comfortably on a flat surface is great for...
And level.
Yes.
Yeah, it was excellent. I think that have to be proud just of what went on and how it got accomplished. Very good. Very proud.
And that the district's contribution was less, about 5%. And it was all in kind. So there was no cash of the district's put into that project. One last reminder about the Bluff Trail and that dogs that remain on leash, we're seeing a marked improvement in that. And now that the Marine Terrace Trail is open, we encourage folks to use that for their dogs when they're walking and they want to walk them off leash. It's certainly wide enough and can accomplish that. Under PROS Commission recruitment, just the announcement that the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space, or PROS Commission, has vacancy for two commissioners. The District Board of Directors reorganized the PROS Commission earlier this year with the appointment of five new commissioners. These vacancies are due to the retirement of longtime Commissioner Jack Braglio and the resignation of Mark Langree because of prior commitments. Individuals interested in contributing to the planning and development of Parks, Recreation, and Open Space projects within the CCSD are encouraged to apply. There's a simple one-page application available at the CCSD, or it can be downloaded from the CCSD's website at www.cambriacsd.org. Those completed applications must be received by the CCSD no later than 4 o'clock on Friday, October 13th. And if anyone has any questions or they need further information, please feel free to contact Connie Davidson at 805-927-6223, or you can email her at cdavidson@cambriacsd.org. And finally, I saw Michael Thompson walk in. He's our PROS Commission Chair, and he's present today to report on behalf of the PROS Commission.
Thank you, Tammy. President Chalicott, members, directors, thank you for having me here. I appreciate the fact that the Marine Terrace Trail is completed. I've used that quite a bit in the past and look forward to getting out there once again. Just a couple items that the Commission has dealt with over the past month. Firstly, at our previous meeting, our last meeting, we did unanimously support the recommendation of adding Top of the World SBA 2 to the build-out reduction program that that is ongoing. The recreation program under CCSD and the trails program and so forth, and then also continuing to work with the staff on the priorities that you have presented to you. I'll stay around if you have any questions or comments on them so I can take it back to the commission meeting next Tuesday. Thirdly, our lap pool committee is still going strong. We were able to successfully somewhat get Shamo Park into the program, and now Steve Figler, along with Ann Wyatt and others who are interested in lap swimming, are proposing to form a swim club, which would keep the pool open during the winter months and heat the pool and so forth. And they're hoping to get enough members to be able to pay to do that. But it's something that's ongoing, and we wish them well. And if anyone is interested in lap swimming, they're still looking for more members. And then finally, we have one more concert in the park scheduled for October 29th. I've been I've attended the last two ever since the commission has resumed oversight, if you would, for the program. And I found them to be very well attended. I think the community is very interested in the program. There were at least several hundred persons there for pretty much the entire duration of the program, and others came and went, and I think they thoroughly enjoyed it. The last group is a group called Beaujolais. Is that
what year?
October 29th.
What right. Vintage?
What year? Beaujolais. I can't tell you what sort of music they play, but we really the first two groups were good. It was a surf group and a rhythm and blues group, and I expect that this one will also be well received. What I'd like to do prior to the next year's program is to bring together more of the community members that have been involved in the program in years past and get their input as to what sort of music we'd like to have, and also bring the program into budgets so that we could have five performances. This year we were limited to four because the budget was slightly in excess of the money that was allocated. And so we'd like to go back to having a full program next year and getting some more community members involved and continuing on. I think it's this program that's really
take off. And Steve Figler is encouraging anyone who wants to be a member to try to get your check to $35 to the Cambria Swim Club. You can drop that off at the district's office. We're just a holding spot for them since we have public offices and we're open during the day. And then Steve said that he is trying to encourage folks to do this because of the CCSD's recreation survey showed that 250 people were interested in a lap pool. So we want to try to get those people out who responded and have them join this membership.
And this will provide for a heated pool and lifeguard service. So it's it would be a really welcome program to the community if they can get it going. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Our district engineer is not here for his report. If you want me to read it, I will. If not, it is included in your package. He is on vacation this week. So that's up to you.
You could highlight if you like.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He summarizes the Water Master Plan, EIR, and Build-Out Reduction Planning that we're continuing to work with RBF on completing the public review draft of the program-level EIR for the Water Master Plan. It was received on August 28th and then reviewed in detail by our staff, and we're currently awaiting additional sections before he can complete the final review. The Pine Knolls tank replacement, I'm going to wait and let Brian report on that because he's got a pretty cool report. The desalination project, we recently received notice that appeals were filed with the California Coastal Commission against the coastal development permit that was previously approved by San Luis Obispo County for our geotechnical hydrogeologic investigation activities. This means that the additional processing time will be required on the permit as we enter into further deliberations at the Coastal Commission. Right now, we waived the 49-day hearing requirement, and I sent that Monday to Jonathan Bishop and Steve Monowitz of the Coastal Commission. What that does and what we want to ensure is that we have the hearings combined on the substantial issue if the staff does indeed find that there are substantial issue based on the appeals filed, and they'll hold the de novo hearing. And what we request is they hold our jurisdictional permit hearing, that is the work that is having to be approved by the California Coastal Commission all at one time. The estimated date we got would be in December. And the Coastal Commission meeting will be in San Francisco. Although they can't make any commitments or promises, that's what they're shooting for as preparing for the hearings. Okay. Christy, that we definitely know have been responded to by the State Parks representatives. So
basically the same complaints?
Yes.
Thank you.
Besides the addition of that new one. So let's
Thank you.
See. And then he moves on to Zone 2 pumping station replacement and the Stewart Street tank enhancement. In response to our earlier request for proposals, he did receive two proposals on September 13th, one from Corollo Engineers and the other from RBF Consulting for the Zone 2 pumping station replacement and Stewart Street tank enhancement project. We plan on interviewing with those firms next week on October 4th. And Bob will make a recommendation for award of the professional services contract on October 26th. Although Bob won't be making that, it will be either Brian or myself because Bob has a conflict with one of the presenters. So if that person isn't chosen, then Bob will be presenting it. But we're going to interview those among staff next week. And that's all that's in his report. Looks like he attached some pictures, but again, of the Pine Knolls tank construction. I'm going to save that for Brian. He's got some pretty cool pictures attached to his report as well.
Brian?
Thank you. Carlos fired up. I'll just remind everybody that Pine Knolls tanks, we moved the tank, and we've only got one tank running, so hopefully we'll have it up and running Friday afternoon. And as you can see here, this is the tank we moved, and it's being placed on a concrete pad. And it only took about 10 minutes to move it, but the prep time took a little while. But kind of exciting. A lot of people showed up in the neighborhood, and some people even brought pizza. So, very interesting.
That was the photo that was included in the newspaper, and we needed to make one point of clarification, too. I recognize that photo from the paper about the size of the tanks.
Actually, this one's not in the paper. This is my own shot. This is taken with a fisheye lens, so I got the whole crane in it and everything. Everything's in there. You can see it's kind of distorted. But I was standing right next to the person that put it in the paper. But the size of the tanks came up, and there's some little bit of confusion on that. These tanks here are about 103,000 gallons apiece. It's 206,000 gallons for both of them. When we replace these with the two new tanks, it'll be an increase at this site of about 450%. It'll be about 940,000 gallons. And over the whole community, since these two tanks will be taken out, it'll be an increase of about 70%.
Right.
Anyway, this is Santa Rosa Creek today and Lagoon. It's pretty out there today. And same thing with San Simeon. Our wells are looking really good, not counting the fact that we really have to be careful with our water because of the Pine Knolls tanks, but for the last 6 years, we're at record highs right now in San Simeon Creek. I don't know how long it's going to stay that way. Hopefully, we'll have some seasonal rains in the right time, and this will be a nice season. But we're looking pretty good right now as far as water supply. And this is showing long-term. And it's the black line. This one is a black line with the diamonds. And you can see we're the same as last year, just a little bit higher. And Santa Rosa, we actually have Santa Rosa off now. We couldn't run Santa Rosa while we have Pine Knolls off, so we've let it rest for a while. And this was on the 14th, and it's actually come up a little bit. This is back on the site, on the tank site, and just wanted to show a couple shots of what's been going on up there. This is the Allen block wall they put in there, a little retaining wall. There's no concrete in it. It's kind of self-supporting, and that'll hold the ground back on the ranch. And this is the slab that we had put in for the part of the ring wall for the new tank, the second new tank, and also a support for the tank that we just moved. And a lot of steel in it. And there's about 90 yards of cement in there as well. It's about $125 a yard now. And those flat pieces of steel hanging up are the seismic restraints. And this is the crane that came up. It's a 200-ton crane. It only had to pick up 15 tons, so it was a pretty easy job for it. This thing has five axles on it, and it's a pretty unwielding place to get in, but all five axles steer, so it just went in there pretty slick. This is being placed again on the slab, and these are the restraints welded in. This is another subject. This is our clarifier on that wastewater treatment plant went down, and I think it was August 31st, and due to fatigue in the chains of the elasticizers come out of the plastic, and they're brittle, and they started to break. It's an item that we planned to actually change out in 10 years, and it's been longer than that, and we kind of put it off due to financial reasons, and so they broke. When the first clarifier broke, staff jumped on it really fast, diverted everything over to another clarifier, and started working on it and dewatering it. And while they were working on this clarifier, the other clarifier loaded up, put more wastewater, and they're all working together to help us out. And it's not a very clean job. It got late and cold, and here's Ron Head and Pat Clark and getting dirty. And you can see that even though people get really dirty, they're still smiling and having a good time. It's kind of the MASH attitude. If you don't do this, you don't like it, and you won't be in it very long. And there's Andy again, and we've got, who's down there in the bottom? I think it's, it's not Jeremy. I think it's Richard, but I don't know. I can't tell. Anyway.
What's a clarifier?
A clarifier, after the after you go through the activated sludge process, the biological process, the material goes into a clarifier, and the heavy material settles down in it, clarifies it, just like you clarify butter, you know, the salt and the solids go to the bottom and the clear comes to the top. And the clear stuff goes out, that's our effluent, and we disinfect it and it goes out to the spray field. And the solids go to the bottom, and those, if I go back up here, those flights are supposed to be on a chain, they're supposed to be straight and even. They travel around and push the solids back to the front of the clarifier, and they're pumped up and back into the activated sludge. And it goes around in a big circle like that until there's too much sludge, and then we pump it into the digester. And that's how it works, and it clarifies it. Is that clarified?
Brian?
Yes.
I appreciate the work the guys are doing in both departments, and it does kind of show the error of delayed maintenance. We think we saved some money, but we really could have caused a real catastrophe with both of them going out together.
Yeah, it's kind of a panic thing for some when that happens. We know how to fix them, but we just, as far as parts were, we came down to the last part that we had, and these parts aren't easy. You don't go down to the store and buy them in town or even in this county or in this state. They're special parts. So just went, whew, we dodged a bullet there, but we've got parts ordered, and we're gonna have to replace all the chains and everything right now. So we're gonna have to spend the money anyway. So
absolutely,
that's what we'll do.
Okay.
This is something else we've worked on. This is a non-potable pump we put in. It's in our middle of our spray field, and this is going to replace the water tank that's out there for the non-potable. And it's went online just the other day, and I was out there today, and there's people out there filling it up, and they really like it because it comes out a lot faster, more pressure, and they can fill up that green one to the left for maintenance. And this is the site right through the gate at 990 San Simeon Creek Road to pick up your water. And it's used quite a bit. People really like it. And they make it doesn't really pencil out, but I mean, people like it, and it's an event, and they feel good about doing it. So we're glad to supply it. Oops, I don't know how that got in there, but there's Kathy's scoop. Tanner. I knew you liked it. But that came out good. That's a great picture.
Great book.
Anyway. Let's see if I got a few more things in here. In your report, the published report, if you look at the Pine Knolls tanks, one thing I wanted to point out was the gravel pad where the tank was lifted off of. And if you look at that gravel pad, it was pea gravel, and there's very little rust on it, very little color, and no tubercular material. So the bottom of the tank's pretty good, and it should more than last us through the short time that we're using it for a temporary tank.
I guess the question, Brian, what was holding the tank up as far as seismic was concerned?
The earth. The earth. It just stayed there. It's just the earth holding it up. There's no seismic restraints to the ground. It's just sitting on pea gravel.
It's just
like the other one next to it.
Just
like that. Only it's about 32 feet tall.
Okay.
Filled with 100,000 gallons of water. Also, just to give you a heads up, the tank's in place. They disinfected it. We found some leaks in it last night when we were filling it. They patched the leaks today, and we're filling it back up again. We have to disinfect it for about 24 hours, and we've taken a back tee, and we have to let it go 24 hours before we find out whether the back tee is good or not. Once we find out, which should be tomorrow afternoon, if we pass the bacteria test and there's no bacteria in there, we'll be able to turn the water back on and have both tanks running. But just one caveat to that, the chlorine in it's pretty high. It's about 3 parts per million, which is like about a swimming pool. And so the chlorine in that area will be kind of high. You take a shower, it's going to be a little bit strong. So, but that's just for your protection for coliform bacteria. So, it'll go away within a day. Just to let you know. And still got any more?
You want to mention DeLon?
Yes, I do. I just wanted to mention too that he's a really nice guy. And I think next month there's some new people that we have, and I'll get some pictures of them and introduce them here so people can see who they are when they come up to your house. They don't. think they're strangers, and I think it would be a good idea. And that's it. Thank you. Anything?
You got
any questions?
The SCADA. You got the SCADA. Do you?
On the SCADA, we've got two documents in. Just received them. The documents are for. There's a takeoff list in there for the equipment to purchase, and also a document for actually installing the equipment and going out to bid on that. We're going to meet next week on the 10th or the 11th and pound that out and finalize it, and then we'll be finishing up on that. And that this is to place the backbone of the SCADA system in, and most everything's in the water department on that end of it. So in the next few months, we should have that up and running, hopefully.
Mr. President, one question. The biosolids dewatering machine, Brian?
Yeah, it's still there, and we're trying to work on it. We've had a lot of things going on, but we'll get back on it.
Now that they're fully staffed and hopefully we've repaired the clarifier chains, and now that Pine Knolls is in, you know, or at least getting started with construction, I think it helped getting DeLon on board so that we've got a full staff there.
Well, I'll just point one other thing out about biosolids is we've been hauling biosolids to San Joaquin Composting, and we've been interrupted in that, so we're not hauling biosolids anywhere again. We've drafted a letter to San Joaquin, care of the regional board up there, expressing our concern and hoping that we can continue in the short term until we get our press up and running. It's happening everywhere, and it's unfortunate that the regional boards in different areas act different, and they've ever becoming a part of the problem and not a part of the fix. So hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully this will work out. One of the opinions that I had was that this is not just a my backyard issue. We all visit everybody's towns. We go on vacations. We do commerce everywhere. And we're all a part of this problem, and we all have to take care of it no matter where we are. And somebody's taking care of us when we're in their town. So it's just not your backyard. So
you have the response information that's current through September 21st of 2006. And to highlight some of that for you, this continues to be our busiest year on record. We have responded to a total of 651 calls so far, 36 fire calls, 3 fire alarms, 3 hazardous materials calls, 365 medical emergencies, 34 traffic collisions, 108 hazardous situations. Those are comprised of mainly a lot of the trees that fell over during the storm. Public service assist 78 and false alarms 24. And those are detailed month by month there in the packet for your review. Not only have we been busy in the operational end of things, we've also had a lot going on in the other highlighted areas that we're involved with. In prevention and education, over the last month, we've had 9 new residential and remodel fire plan reviews completed, 16 residential and commercial fire safety inspections, and 10 water conservation inspections conducted. Our crews have been busy. They've been out in the commercial end with the company fire inspection program, which we took off with again 2 months ago, and we've completed 15 of those over this last month, which is basically brought up a lot of issues for us that it's created a lot more work for the department that we're going to have to deal with. But it's good. The guys are getting out and getting active in the businesses and seeing what's out there, so we're happy with that. Members of the CCSD Fire Department and Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group recently attended a seminar up in Paso, and it was all about defensible space and building construction, non-combustible building construction materials. We witnessed a lot of nice demonstrations and got a lot of good information from the person that's considered the guru for fire safety, fire safe construction, and defensible space, Steve Quarles out of UC Davis. As you all know, Fire Prevention Week, camp in a barn and started that, but that's fire legend. I don't know whether that's got any truth to it, but the Fire Prevention Week is also the longest running public health and safety observance on record. Fire investigations, we currently have two open investigations. Fire hazard fuel reduction and defensible space. The 2006 fire hazard fuel reduction program has concluded. The district contractor has cleared the lots, were not cleared by the owner or their contractor. And of the 1,900 parcels that were sent notices to be cleared, less than 190 of those went to contract. In order to meet the new defensible space requirements and into the future, we're looking at adding approximately 300 to 400 more parcels over the next 2 or 3 years. This year, the additions that we had were fairly stressful for both our staff and CCSD, the administrative staff there, and we currently have had meetings to try to address some of the issues that have been brought up. Basically, what we found is that with the increased acreage that we're trying to clear and the minimal amount of contractors available to do that work and the minimal time frame that we have because of the county tax roll, we have a very short window of time to try to get these things done. So we're exploring different avenues and options that may be available to streamline that. The CCSD Fire Department Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group hosted the annual chipping event over this last weekend. We were able to reach about 55 citizens. This year's event was much smaller than what we're used to seeing in the past, where it's had more notice involved with it. Due to the fires in the Southern California area, we weren't able to get a solid commitment from the California conservation crew to commit to us to a time when we could do that, and we only had about a week lead time to let folks know that we had the chipping weekend even available to us. I'm sure you're all aware that we lost our grant funding for that. So the CCSD was able to fund the chipping weekend this year. So we were really glad to see that we were able to. There's over 2,500 firefighters that are deployed to that. Although he's coming back, it's not because the fire is going out just yet. It's just that he's being replaced. He's been there 2 weeks. So it's more of a rehab and relief effort. The CCSD Fire Department Training Officer has recently acquired another home in the area that is slated for demolition. That's going to present our department with a lot of needed training opportunities. That is the house on Adams Street, the one that was hit by a tree where we had a person that was pinned in the storm. And we really appreciate the generosity of the owner of that home to make that available to us. That helps us out a lot. We recently had the conversion of our engine 5797 to a paramedic engine. That is in cooperation with the community healthcare district. That program is working great, and to date we have run, I believe, 16 ALS calls with that engine. So Captain Bill Hollingsworth is currently back at the National Fire Academy in Emmitsburg, Maryland. His course of study is the management of emergency medical services. The knowledge that he gains from that will greatly enhance our ability to deal with our EMS program in the community and the current stuff that's on board with the emergency medical services with the healthcare district here. And that about wraps it up. Just want to remind everybody that our fire season really hasn't kicked in here yet. but it will soon. Temperatures are starting to warm up, and we want everybody to be safe. And if there's any weeds or abatement, any of that type of issue that needs to be cleared out around their homes, we urge them to do that.
Thank you, Mark.
Any questions?
I was going to mention, based on conversation with fire personnel earlier, these mornings where we wake up and there's no dew on the ground is the critical times for you. Is that true?
When the fog goes away and the days get real nice, those beautiful winter days we have, that's when our situation gets bad here. It's when it's bad for everybody else up in the valley, when the weather's hot up there and it's
fog. I heard some pretty exciting stuff from my colleagues, and now we're really going to hear something exciting like audit. The district audit has been completed, and nothing of note to report. And our intent, our hope, is to bring it back to the board for approval at the December board meeting. And since we have gone through the audit and pretty much wrapped up a lot of the stuff, I thought I'd summarize sort of the financial results by fund, which I have put in my report. For both water and wastewater, we're still in a shortfall situation. Wastewater a little bit higher than what we had projected. Water a little bit lower than what we had projected. The general fund, we had a slight surplus primarily due to the fact that we picked up a little bit extra property tax revenue, but that additional revenue was offset by a couple of expenses. One of which was actually my error. When I was cleaning stuff up for the auditors, I realized I had miscoded a KEMAC expense, so I had to, that's part of it. So my apologies on that one. The final payment to Chevron is in process, and this is the last payment that we will get from Chevron. It's $300,000, of which we lose $57,000 going to the attorneys. This goes directly into the facilities management operating budget. So for the operating year past 07, for 06, 07, they will have this $300,000. For the operating year after that, it's no more. So we're going to have to come up with some additional money for facilities management to keep them going. And finally, I wanted to just kind of reference our reserves as of 6/30/06 dropped $2 million. We had a balance of $8.9 million as of June 30th of 2006. The current reserve balance right now is $8.1 million, as we had to bring in some additional money in September just to pick up and pay for not only operating expenses but also some of our capital improvement expenses. And as you have heard from my two colleagues previously, there's a lot going on in the district, and all that wonderful stuff does cost and requires resources to keep it going. And so we have our reserves are dropping. With the Pine Knolls tank well on its way, and I'm estimating that to be. The last thing I just wanted to mention is I have kind of summarized some of the capital improvement projects, again by fund. And these are the primary reason why our reserves have dropped. Of course, there's a lot of activity going on in our infrastructure projects, particularly Pine Knolls tank, biosolids, and we finished up the East-West Ranch pipeline. So with that, the other thing I did want to mention is the capital improvement project expenditure does include the district engineer and the district council based upon the time element that I did receive from them. So that concludes my report, and I'd be more than happy to entertain any comments or questions.
Yes.
Patrick, under the first segment of your report, the audit, you didn't mention it, but so maybe it's not so important, but so I'm understanding from the last paragraph that the state has now requested that we pay them back that money for the wells, is that?
No. All that means is part of the audit test work is that they take our liabilities and actually confirm that balance with the individual that we owe the money to. The state has come back and said, oh, yeah, these guys do owe us $1.5 million, but they have not yet formally made a request that we return that. They've just acknowledged the fact that we do owe it. There's a little note on the bottom that says payment due upon settlement of litigation or something to that effect, but they have not made a formal request for the money.
So there's still some possibility you were going to perhaps ask them to forgive it, or and so we don't know where that is.
I would hope so. We'll see how sweetly we can smile and how well we can
okay,
craft
thank you.
Something to them to allow them to allow us to do that.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted clarification on what that meant. Thank you.
And with regard to that, if it were that they were to forgive us, we believe it would be because we make either SR4 permanent,
right,
or if we had to relocate it to a more permanent site, that's what they would agree to allow us to use the funds for.
So there'd have to be a reason for the forgiveness that we'd actually
use. I'm thinking so, Patrick, and I think that seems logical.
Yeah, great.
Since it was a loan program.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I wasn't sure what that sentence meant, so I was hoping that it was something good.
Well,
thanks.
I want to clarify one thing, too. With Patrick's report of the $225,000 that's identified as part of the LAIF funds, that is the money we got from San Luis Obispo County, okay? So I don't want you to think that we're spending down the general funds for the environmental impact.
But I've seen it in different circumstances. As pointed out, one of the best bets, if you can present a project within the scope of the original grant and have it reprogrammed, and that's a way to be able to utilize the money again in the district. There's a number of programs where the money revolves. Block grant is one, which is federal money, and the Slow Land Conservancy, I believe, has the money to buy lots here in this community and sell them, and that's regenerated itself, so they have the same amount they started with, so would require some exploration into the particular program, but it has been done before.
What can we do to enhance the likelihood of the state forgiving the loan?
I assume we start talking directly with them, but I would hope that we'd have a purpose for the reprogramming before we go to them. Something more than just an idea, but something with costs and timetables and needs.
How long have we had the money, Patrick?
We have had the money, 2 years. It's pretty much when SR4 went operable. And a somewhat respond also to Director Funky Ballou's comment. I have had a conversation with them, but this was probably, I'm going to say, maybe over a year or so ago, and they kind of said somewhat what Art just indicated, and that is we'll come back with something concrete. Once you've got a definitive plan where you need to move that well at the high school, if that indeed is what's going to happen. So if we can come up with a definitive plan with some specific cost estimates, then we can go back to the state and see what they do.
Mr. President, Patrick, the loan is interest-free. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It is interest-free.
Just
that
so
is
the
correct.
Ratepayers and residents of Cambria understand we're not accruing interest on
that. Good point. Good point. That is interest-free. That you're absolutely correct.
In fact, we're making money on the loan.
Yes, we are, actually. We're making what LAIF is paying us in interest. Yeah, you're arbitrage, I think they call that. Huh?
Well, Tammy and I were just discussing our lease with the high school for the site of SR4 expires in less than 4 years. So we have to determine what we're going to do there fairly quickly to make sure if there are water supplies in place, either we stay there or move somewhere else. And as you know, the planning process takes years to be able to do that. So it's
it was when she first came on the board that it came online. So it's about 4 years ago. In fact, Bob Gresham, it was his first project when he came to the district.
I think it's been longer than that. When I first started in year 2000, the lease was in place and the well was constructed.
Okay.
So it's been over 6 years.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, it's obvious that Patrick can't retire until this is sorted out.
6 years.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate that, Patrick. I just had one question. Is there any reason why the final presentation of the audit has to wait till December. Is that just a normal practice?
There's two reasons for it. One is the current audit firm, Ausleben and Hartsheim, they've had some staffing problems, not problems, some they've, you know, really, they've lost a couple of key people. So the gentleman that is really kind of doing a lot of the work is pretty well stretched to the max and is out doing quite a bit of traveling. So that's one. The other thing is that once the audit comes back in draft form, the district responds and has to do what they call a management discussion and analysis report. So that also takes a little bit of time to get, you know, all of the appropriate financial information into the report and sort of tailor the report to read the way we would like it to read. Ideally, yeah, maybe we could shoot for November. I was just trying to give us a margin of error here by putting it into December, but
I think you've explained there's work to do. You know, though the audit is done, there's still work to do. That's really where I was going.
That is true. Yeah. There's still some, you know, last minute tinkering at tinkering, that's not the right word to use here. I'm talking about accounting.
not for an auditor.
Explanations.
All right, thank you very much, Patrick. Appreciate it. Are we ready to move? Are there any members' report? Seeing none, we'll move to the consent agenda, please.
Okay, item 6A is to approve the expenditures for the month of August 2006. 6B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meeting from August 24th, 2006. 6C is to adopt Resolution 46-2006 approving the reimbursement resolution for Pine Knolls Water Tank Replacement Project. And 6D is the authorization and approval of a CCSD letter to the California Coastal Commission supporting the County of San Luis Obispo's request that review of the North Coast Area Plan be limited to an additional 60 days. 2006 operating guidelines. They're there for you. Very similar format that you're used to seeing. If you'd like for me to go through some of the PROS priorities, I'm happy to do that. The operating guidelines were established and been brought before you probably about 2 years ago. So I'm happy to go through some of those if you'd like for me to do that.
Or would anyone want Michael to speak to any of this?
That's right. Michael's here still, too. Yeah.
I have a question on the operations operating guidelines, but if we want to deal with the priorities first, that's okay.
Doesn't matter.
May not be so much of a question as a suggestion. Under the statement of responsibilities, I remember in the old guidelines it had something a little more, and it seems to me if you're going to talk about responsibilities in this operating guideline, we should say something like the main responsibilities advise the CCSD board on matters related to parks and recreation. So it seems like that should be added. I don't know what the commission would feel about it. And it seems that under that we had some further explanations like gather information, assess the community needs, research, and then propose some actions to the board. So it seems to me that it still should be in there. I don't know. What do you think, Mike?
I agree with you on at least the first one, and certainly I think we can take it back and relook at that prior suggestions.
It's sort of more of an introduction than a guideline for operating, but it's sort of, it seems, if you're going to hit.
Basically, what we did was to go through the previous document and cut and paste and take a look at how the guidelines were relative to the new composition of the commission and the real world working procedures. I think your suggestion in terms of that addition is a fine one.
Okay, good. Otherwise, those look great to me.
Could we clarify where we would want to put that roughly?
Well, I was thinking it goes 1A, under Statement of Responsibilities, and then change A to B and B to C and so forth.
Okay. In other words, above create an annual budget, you put this ahead of that. Okay.
And you put advise CCSD Board of Directors on Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Matters?
Yes. Okay. Matters related to Parks and Recreation through regular, monthly meetings or funding probably. And then recommending actions. So it was some, I didn't really look up the actual words that were in the old one. You might look at that.
Okay.
But I think the main thing is the one statement about advising the board is your main responsibility.
Certainly.
So, I mean, if you guys want to add that as your A and change the other letters, I think that that would be fine.
Well, isn't it up to the commission to accept that first? Or no?
I mean, I guess the way I look at it, unless Art says it's out of order, the commission knows that that's their role as a board advisory committee. So
okay.
I think they'd be comfortable.
I would think so.
Okay.
Would you want to move that then?
Okay. I'd move that we make that addition then, that the one sentence be A, advise the CCSD board, et cetera. And then second part of the motion would be to look at the old wording and see if there's more explanation that might help be helpful to put in there.
I'll second. All right. Any discussion of that? All right. Okay. I think then we're ready for... Did you make that? Yeah, we have a motion. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion?
Could I just make...
Yeah.
Let's see. I didn't mark it. But anyway, I just wanted to comment that in terms of the Recreation Committee that's working presently, I'd like us to agree that when they make a recommendation to the charge that we've given them, is that we then ask the PROS Commission to look at the funding mechanisms and that they be the recommending body for that.
Would that be generally or just the
just
committee?
Just for that, I'm sure.
Or is that the one that's going to spend the money?
I didn't mark it in yellow what the place where I thought that should go. Just to provide a community recreation
it's
group.
It's probably under five. Are you looking at like 5-2? You're not looking at their standing
well,
committees.
Well, I'm back on the priorities now.
Oh, back probably. On their priorities.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I guess a district to plan to provide community recreation program. And I don't, maybe it doesn't need to be added to this, but that I'd like them to have that direction. But because there was the way we left it last time was a little, you know, the role of the PROS Commission. And because we were working out of order, not because
yeah.
It doesn't really change this, but it's just that.
I noted that direction.
I was just wondering whether you were really generally saying that the PRO should explore funding when they make a recommendation, or is it more than that?
Yeah.
I was going to take that opportunity because the PROS Commission worked really hard on their priorities,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see on the first page, and this is for the public's information, the headline is Develop Funding Strategies For, and
right.
that's a CCSD
right.
plan to provide community recreation
okay.
program under the CCSD Parks and Rec Department,
yeah.
so it does fully
it's
fall
already
into that.
There. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
and
you.
Increasing Parks and Rec Department staffing, development of the community park, coordination with the Coast
right.
Unified School District for development of the Santa Lucia Middle School athletic fields, and then development of trails, the Santa Rosa Creek Trail from Rodeo Grounds to Highway 1, the Coastal Ridge Trail, trails linking Lodge Hill and Air Force Housing to the East Ranch, east portion of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, trail from Highway 1 gate to the Forest Loop, and then development of a lap pool. And you'll even see down that they went so far as to provide ongoing PROS committee tasks in collaboration with the CCSD
right.
staff, such as the build-out reduction program, long-term funding options for the CCSD Parks and Rec Department, joint use agreements with Coast Unified School District, development of Center Street Pocket Park, that's where the old CCSD admin office was, coordination with active and moderate use athletic programs, coordination of master calendar for recreational activities in Cambria, completion of the Cambria Historical Center Park, use of former Cambria Grammar School, coordination of skate park use, and coordination of concerts by the sea events. So I didn't want to make light of it by not presenting it because I was attending most of the meetings when they were discussing this, and they worked really hard to put together these priorities for the next 2 years.
Well, I'm personally delighted with them, and I first I'll say it, I didn't recognize my own shorthand, which is exactly that, creating this, developing the funding strategies. I wanted to note that. But going on down, maybe if we could deal with words just for a minute, under development of a lap pool, that maybe that sentence should be, what is it, access or I'm not sure. We don't want to actually develop a lap pool, do we? Isn't that what?
No, but I think they were just following the lead.
Maybe a program,
yeah.
develop a lap
however you program. Want it to work. You know, Steve Figler, I have to be very complimentary. Yes. He and his committee are working very hard in this community to be responsive to that survey and the folks who said they were interested. And we just included it in here because of all of the efforts that are undergoing right now for that project.
Yeah. Well, we could say a development of access to a lap pool or something like that. But.
Sure.
May I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Can someone please explain to me why the ongoing PROS committee tasks in collaboration with CCSD staff, why those tasks are subject to collaboration with CCSD staff, but the funding strategies above appear to be independent of collaboration with CCSD staff? Is that true? PROS creates funding strategies. Do you collaborate with the finance people of CCSD?
The finance people of CCSD through the general manager and the liaison with the Connie Davison, obviously. Those are the two folks that we specifically collaborate with.
My concern here is in the future, I'd like to avoid what I consider problems in the past where people who are interested in parks and open space make their recommendations and includes funding issues that's not really their expertise. So what I would suggest is in the future, when you develop funding strategies, instead of just talking with Connie, who does not have expertise in funding, you do confer with those staff members, they do. People from the finance department, Tammy, those kind of folks.
We'd be happy to.
Thank you.
And I have to admit that I'm attending every meeting because I'm the mm-hmm. Parks and Recreation Manager. That's my other hat that I wear. And I like Elon's suggestion, Michael, mm-hmm. about just dropping those words in collaboration with CCSD staff, because everything here, they work so closely with us on. And as Connie is a liaison, it's more from the grant administration and project management perspective. But I am there, and they would I would work closely, obviously, mm-hmm. with my staff on finance.
So just ongoing tasks? Yeah.
I would just end it as ongoing PROS committee tasks and then just leave it at that.
And I think if I could just throw in there, I headed up a program in L.A. that had some $400 million in grants. And when I moved up here and retired, I've really been impressed with the degree of expertise that Connie Davison has with respect to the grant programs. How money gets to this little village in the north central coast when you have all these other competing interests, and I'm amazed that she is able to ferret out as much as she does the Marine Terrace Trail and so forth. I'm just really impressed with her.
So am I. I didn't mean to suggest that that Connie does not have expertise.
No, that was just an independent observation.
When I was talking about funding, I was looking to Patrick Bradley's side. That's the people that I'd like to be included when you make your final recommendations.
Definitely.
Let's clarify that. Are we going to drop off on?
Again, just want to carry that out, is that most of the funding we've had for Parks and Recreation has been external funding through grants or think money from the county. So Connie definitely has been the major source of finding funds for these programs. And to date, that seems to be our future for some time to come.
Yeah. I think historically, if you go back 10 years, the cupboard was empty. We never found a penny from anywhere. We just did it ourselves or didn't do it. Right. So it's like suddenly the cupboard is almost full. We actually go in there and find something in there. So,
I think it's amazing that you can go back 10 years.
Well, yeah.
I mean, because I can't go back like more than a couple of weeks before.
Don't ask.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. But the reason I say this is because I was liaison on the PROS commission, and I saw the hand-wringing. They say, wish we could do this, I wish we could do that. And we go and ask the county or someone that, the answer was no. So it's night and day in that particular area, and I appreciate it. Are we ready for the question now on this?
Case as the second The only change is the deletion of that.
In collaboration.
Yeah, in collaboration with.
And then we changed the wording for the lap pool to say development of lap pool access.
Right.
So you need a motion to accept the priorities and adopt resolution four.
No.
Okay.
Didn't you make it initially?
Yeah, you made it. I second it.
Well, did you make the motion, the earlier one, or did you just change the form of the guidelines? I think that was what the motion was.
Yes. Okay, I'd like to move that we adopt Resolution 48-2006, approving Parks and Recreation and Open Space PROS 2006 priorities, and adopt Resolution 49-2006, approving PROS operating guidelines.
As amended?
As amended, yes, thank you.
You want to continue or second, sir?
Yeah, I'll second it a second time.
Okay, thank you. Well, those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. And I should add, I do appreciate the work the PROS are doing because a lot goes into this, and thank you very much. Thank you, Mike. We're now to item B, Special Project.
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
Mr. President, I have a conflict of interest.
About today is top of the world. SPA 1 is where we, you don't live in, but...
Fern Canyon.
Fern Canyon.
And it's top of the world with a view shed of Highway 1.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so we're not talking about Lodge Hill.
No, not today. Although the map that I provided to you all shows both as special project areas. Carlos, would you come?
So if you own property on Lodge Hill, we can talk about this? I can talk about this without a conflict?
Yes, because we're talking about top of the world today.
Fine. Thank you.
Excuse me while I give this map to Carlos. Thank you.
I think it's important for folks to know the area that we are talking about.
I do, too. That's why I think the map is important. Yeah. You all have it in your agenda packets. It's something that we worked on collaboratively. Right now, the existing ordinance, and let me first give a little background of how this has come about. As a result of the work that your Citizens Finance Committee did from the build-out reduction program, there were recommendations made as a result of that in order to encourage more lot retirements and or restrict areas that are protected with designations from water transfers. So what I'm discussing with you today is an action plan to bring about what your Citizens Committee recommended, and then it has been brought forward to your Open Space Committee for PROS. They recommended it up through the PROS Commission, and your PROS Commission recommended it up, as you heard Michael Thompson say before, for your consideration and approval. What I had originally intended, and you'll see on the action plan that I developed, is to bring the actual ordinance to you, not for approval, but just to present it and show you how I would recommend changing it. But there was a strong voice among all of your constituent groups that I just mentioned and staff that there should be the appropriate level of notice to the people, the property owners who live in Special Projects Area 2, that being the top of the world. What had happened, and it was fully my intent to do that, to get appropriate notice so people could be here today for more than what we're going to discuss today, is there was just some issues with getting the lots identified in our customer information system to get out a timely notice. So what I'm bringing today is to just discuss the idea that has now been openly talked about among these constituent groups and let you know what the ideas are, and then to seek your input and get some input from the public so you see how this is going to work.
Why do we need 7 notices within 11 months?
You might not. But folks who have talked about it, and we've talked among them, it just gives everyone an opportunity to say, that's why we're having this meeting. Now, I guess if before we could get started on the notices, the reason why we're doing it, just for the public's information and everybody to have a well-rounded background, is currently the existing district's ordinance provides that there can be no position transfers within SPA 1, okay? That's why the map is up there. It's in orange, okay? So no one can transfer their waitlist position into those two areas. And I say two areas, even though it is just one area, it's split by Highway 1 into the Fern Canyon area as well. So what we're asking or what we're requesting is that same policy decision apply to SPA 2, which is the green area known as Top of the World SPA 2. In order to do that, the committee's saying, you know, let's give enough time for people to do their property transactions, give enough notice for them to come and let you hear from constituents who live within that area to give you their pros and cons and how they feel about it. And it is really just a very simple, you'll see that I attached the ordinance, just a few places where I would have to add the words top of the world SPA2. And your sample pages that I brought from the code that are attached to your staff report, they're listed, as I also said in the staff report, in section 2 or A2 and then A3 and then B1. You'll see where I will just bring back an ordinance that includes top of the world SPA2. So what I did as a result that Director Funky Ballou was talking about is develop that table for the action plan. Where we are today is step 3A in the blue, and we would send out notice to the property owners on October 10th and then bring it back next month to present the ordinance rewritten. And then just I followed up with just other informational notices and public notices that we would actually just take out a little ad in the Cambrian, put it on our website, and put it on our posting sites. But I'm certainly open to comments about the level of notices. And for the public's information, the initial hearing on this item, where you would actually be considering amending the ordinance, is proposed for July 26th of 2007. And then, since we're now subject to the new requirements for a second reading of ordinance changes, that would occur on August 23rd of 2007. Of course, these are subject to the fact that you would have these as your board meeting dates. I just looked at the 2007 calendar, obviously. And then the effective date would take place 30 days thereafter, or September 24th of 2007. So I am certainly open to any comments and suggestions for improving it or changing it.
May I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Well,
By paring back the notices, I don't know what the magic number is, but I think 7 is excessive. The second thing is that I think there's some context that goes with this that ought to be discussed. Back in the mid-1980s, the State Coastal Conservancy, working with the County of San Luis Obispo, initiated the formation of the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. And the Land Conservancy's first project was to begin to acquire lots in Cambria in a designated area known as Fern Canyon. Later, the Coastal Conservancy identified Special Projects Area Number 2 and provided that once the lot acquisition process in Special Projects Area Number 1 is substantially complete, then the State Coastal Conservancy money could be used in the top of the world area. So there's a component to this that involves state money, and through the State Coastal Conservancy, the state of California has designated Special Projects Area Number 2 as a very high priority area because of the resources that are there. There's a pretty dense forest. There's a high number of undeveloped lots, and there's a significant view shed from Highway 1 that the state wants to have protected. So it's not as if we're doing this all on our own. There is a very significant adjunct to this that involves the state through the State Coastal Conservancy. And I just want to make sure everybody understands that.
No, I thought Peter was pretty good going back 10 years, but you just gone back like, what, 30?
20. 21.
Must be the vitamins you take in, right?
One of the things I noticed that the physical locations are very important about, and there is this discussion of deforestation and erosion and so on, and this is the reason these areas are pinpointed, I assume.
And for the public's information who may be watching from home, I put down the street bounding areas, that the area of top of the world SPA2 is bounded on the west side by Highway 1 and Green Street and Pine Ridge Street
at no expense to the district. And I think we need to encourage this program to continue on, and by taking the action that is proposed here, I think we'll be doing that.
So making it impossible to transfer water meters, then that would help the Land Conservancy work and purchase lots in this area?
Correct. Yes.
And I have made contact with Bob Hill, and he will be happy to come. I thought it would be pretty interesting for the public and you all to have a status report on his work in SPA 1, just so that you see to the level of detail how hard that they work within our own community. And so he said he would do that. I've just got to schedule that in for him to be here.
How would each of you suggest that we go about changing the timeline? General manager has.
You know what? If you want to give me the discretion to knock it down in half, I'll do that. I'm happy to do that. I hear that loud and clear.
I think it's really important that something goes out to the public before we take any actions, for example. So no one can say, well, I didn't hear about it last week. And,
okay, that's a good point.
Yeah. I don't care if we make 25 notices, there'll still be a segment that'll say, we never heard about it.
And I understand that too, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I was going to clarify is for the public is that this doesn't affect anyone's home in that area. It doesn't affect any remodeling they might do. It's only transferring water.
It doesn't impact anybody who has a waitlist position in this area and those things. The existing ordinance will stay in place except for just the addition of SPA 2. That's it. So the same rules that apply to SPA 1 will apply to SPA 2.
That's one reason why I thought the notice was overkill, because it will impact very few people, really.
Yeah, and it seems to me that the most critical time for notice is when we're near to the time when an ordinance will be adopted. I can see sending out a notice soon, maybe one notice, and then at the time we're prepared to adopt an ordinance, which is scheduled here next July, that an additional notice go out.
And I guess in practice, if, for example, someone was thinking they want to transfer, you know, water service into this area, that obviously takes a while to manipulate, and it's better for them to know about it now than just before we pass the ordinance, which is what you were trying to do, right?
Now, if Spartic Area Number 1 or Number 2 is there to control erosion, it certainly could control a great deal of it if our roads were surfaced. So if there's some way that you could consider working with the county to see whether, especially Fern Canyon Road, if you haven't driven down Fern Canyon Road, you're in for a treat. Because when you think of all the water coming down the hills onto Fern Canyon Road and then down into Fern Canyon, you're losing a lot of soil in there. And there's nothing that we as citizens can do about it, because it takes the vote of so many people in order to get a road surfaced. So if you can find a way of resolving that, it will go a long way in controlling erosion. Thank you.
Well, if we can solve that, the road situation.
Yep. Is there any more discussion?
Does the general manager
have all you need?
Right, thank you. All right, then. We'll move on to item C then.
Okay. 8C is discussion of forest management plan implementation, the future forester position, and potential funding sources. This is an item that Director Funky Ballou brought up in July, and he read into the record and provided the July 20th, 2006 Cambria Forest Committee request, and they were recommending actually that the CCSD hire a licensed professional forester / forest ecologist to begin implementation of the forest management plan, and requested that the district appropriate $7,500 per month or $90,000 per year toward hiring a forester. The Citizens Finance Committee for the Build-Out Reduction Program and the PROS Open Space Committee have each discussed and supported implementation of the Forest Management Program as a component of the CCSD's Build-Out Reduction Program. Funding has been built into the recommended financial scenarios for the Build-Out Reduction Program attributable toward maintenance of the retired lots and management of the open space from which a forester could be paid. So that's just sort of some introduction introductory information for you all to have that discussion and provide direction to us.
Yes.
Yes.
Since the letter was read at our last meeting, I've been thinking about this, and as all I remember is the last time this subject came up was Chief Putney talking to us about the, if we implemented such a thing, the last time we talked about it, it would mean that we would have an enforcement person in our happen if such a person was here in our community.
Mr. President, I think we briefly touched on that subject the last time this was before the board, which was, I believe, the meeting before last. And I think we need to come to grips with the project or the job description. What is this person going to do? Is this person going to be an enforcement officer, or is this person going to be something else? I think that we have a very high fiduciary and moral obligation to take care of the forest, in as much as the district has become the largest landowner, and by default controls most of the forest in town, particularly with the acquisition of the Fiscalini Ranch. And the lot reduction program is going to result in even more of the forest coming into the ownership of the district. With ownership of land comes responsibility. I think we have to face up to our responsibilities, and I think we need to make sure that whatever we do, we don't do harm to the property that we acquire, and hopefully we do things to enhance it. We're admittedly strapped for money at the present time. We have a lot of very expensive infrastructure projects which are under construction or which will be under construction in the near future. So we may not be able to afford a full-time employee to take care of the land that we acquire, but perhaps there are ways between now and the time the moratorium is lifted, when the revenues start to come in to help pay for this position, that we can get some things done. My thought is that perhaps Cal Poly San Luis Obispo Agriculture Department, which I believe has a forestry component to it, can be induced to come down here and take a look and determine whether of the land that we own now and the land we're going to be acquiring in the future.
Could I clarify just that you're not just talking about CCSD-owned property or considering the whole of the forestry parts of Cambria?
Well, at a minimum, CCSD-owned property. Again, we have to come to grips with what the scope of this task is going to be, whether it's going to be an enforcement position or whether it's going to be simply a position that makes sure that the district is a good steward of the property that it owns. Well, I don't think we've had that discussion, and I think we need to do that. I'm not suggesting that we launch into some sort of expensive program. Quite frankly, I don't think we can afford it right now. But I do think we need to start taking steps toward the eventual goal of having somebody who can help us manage the property that we own, and maybe by extension the property that others own.
I certainly think that that's right, that we should be good stewards or managers of our properties. But I think this proposal is meant, and I assume we'll hear from someone, as within the context of the forest management plan, which I'm not sure we accepted it. I'm not sure we adopted it. But again, I'd like to know more if they're thinking of hiring this forester, which I understand is a specifically credentialed kind of employee that does certain things. And once you have that person, then you're kind of beholden to follow whatever that credential tells them to do. So before we make any further decisions or whatever, I'd like to learn a lot more about that, what it would mean to us if we actually went that way, even if we had the money.
May I make some comments?
Yes, we have adopted the forest management plan. I think it was a unanimous 5-0, but I'm not sure about that. But I'm absolutely positive that we've adopted the plan. I think we adopted the plan last year. So we have a plan, and the plan, almost a decade in the making, where the Forest Committee finally was able to present the plan to the board. The board approved the plan, as I said. And now the next stage is to implement the plan. The Forest Committee had numerous discussions about what we're talking about right now. And I thought we had discussed this, but I'll grant you my memories. If one were to read the Cambria Forest Management Plan, it's obvious that it's a voluntary plan. I think it even says so in the preamble. So I don't understand this discussion about enforceability or anything like that. It's about fire safety. It's about education. It's about making the people aware that fire preservation, that forest preservation and taking care of our forest goes hand in hand with build-out reduction. It goes hand in hand with fire protection. It goes hand in hand not only just being good stewards, but with our very survival. A lot of the, I shouldn't say a lot, but some of the activities that for example, Mr. Sanders was I think, impliedly referring to, may actually damage the forest and may, in fact, make our survival more precarious. A forester needs to implement the plan, and there's going to be no guns, there's going to be no enforcement, no one's going to be, we're not going to have a forester and a white horse coming by with a six-shooter and saying, if you don't implement the plan, I'm going to bust you. None of that at all. It's a more enlightened, voluntary approach that is going to preserve the forest and therefore make our life safer. So I'm really gratified that the Citizens Committee and the PROS Open Space Committee have all supported it. I had thought that my colleagues were supporting it. And while I share Mr. Sanders and Ms. Coben's general support for it, I want to take a page out of Mr. Sanders' style, and that is to wait for the moratorium, I think, is too late. In my mind, this is I wouldn't say it's right up there with the tank issues, which I think, of course, are the most important, but they go hand in hand with that, and they require immediate attention. This is really, in my opinion, has gone up in the scale of priorities in much higher than some of the stuff we're spending money for. I'm not going to get into specifics, but I would like to move this up on the scale of priority for the reasons I've stated. Thank you. The fact that we're the largest landowners and we have a responsibility not only to our fellow citizens, but to the rest of the county and the state. The ranch is part of the forest, and our community is part of a forest. And I'd like to see us being a role model for integration of citizens living within a forest. And yes, I don't think we can delay anymore. I think we need to be a little bit more aggressive. I'm not saying we should dump everything else and put this number one, but I was a little concerned by Director Sanders saying, well, maybe we ought to wait until the moratorium gets lifted. And I don't see the moratorium getting lifted. And if that's what you said, I don't know. But
I think you misunderstood me.
Okay. Good. I'm happy I misunderstood.
Just 20-plus miles up the road, I mean, we have one of the world's best public universities when it comes to issues like the issues we're talking about. It's a resource that's sitting there that we ought to tap. And
I don't mean to interrupt you, but
sure.
One of the members of the committee teaches it.
I understand.
Does he teach it? He teaches it, and we've investigated that, and we've tried to get Cal Poly involved. It's not working.
Well, I think it might be a little different you might get a different response. We might get a different response if the district, as a governmental institution, sits down with the administration at Cal Poly and has a discussion about what the university can do, what we can do in terms of resources, and see if there's something that gels. I think it would take no more than a few hours of time, and it might go somewhere, and we might find out that indeed they are interested in working with us. Maybe there are some other things that we can do. I think what somebody needs to do is sit down and think this thing through and come back to us with some specific recommendations. Right now, all we have before us is just a recommendation for a discussion. Somebody has to take the lead on this. Somebody has to get out and do the legwork that's necessary to develop some alternatives and get them back to the board.
Was approached in the past, but with a more definitive request with help. That's one of the key things that makes Cal Poly unique is the fact that students in the particular in the advanced programs beyond a bachelor's degree have to have presented some form of plan program that they've developed and implemented in their field. And I think, having been a college professor, this would be a very strong appeal to provide an opportunity for an advanced student under the guide of the appropriate background from the faculty member to collaborate with the Forest Committee. You've already identified what the problems are, what the need is, and you could scope it. And as a matter of fact, we've got a faculty member here from in the community that has just stepped down from the management positions that he's had. He's still there at Cal Poly, and I'm quite sure that we could probably get some kind of assistance to pinpoint a logical approach to implement this. We just, you know, I was on the Forest Committee from the very beginning before I had to step back and reduce some of my other activities when they got a little bit out of hand. And I'm familiar with the program. I've followed it all along. But I think the implementation of it, it'd be marvelous to be able to have go after it with the money in hand, but it isn't there. But that doesn't mean that there are other alternatives. And I think the suggestion that my colleague at the right has made should be a viable option, something that doesn't really cost that much money.
Could I add to that, having also spent 25 years working for the California State University system teaching, the use of, it's been a long time since I read the Forest Management Plan, and I'm not sure what our adopting it meant, if we took responsibility for it or whatever. But someone needs to come up with saying, what is it we want to be done? If the district is going to take on the employment of somebody for something, let's have some group be designated to say who's going to say what it is that we need done. We've already discussed the management plan, and as Elon said, that we adopted, and I'm sure that's correct. All of us agree that it's a good idea to manage the forest and have some organized, systematic way to do it. But now we're talking about the district hiring somebody or engaging somebody to work with us. So what is it? So who's going to tell us, and how are we going to decide what it is that we want this person to do? That would be my question for the next time we bring this up.
Well, listen,
I disagree with some of you when they say we don't have the money. I think we do have the money. The question is whether we want to prioritize it and whether we want to spend it. And there has to be a decision, a will on the board, whether we feel this is important enough to spend the money. Obviously, we need to spend the money when the clarifier goes out. That's basic. Do we need to spend the money? I'm not going to go into some of the other programs that I know we're spending a lot more than this is costing. It's not the time. My purpose in making these comments is just I don't buy for a moment that we don't have the money. We do have the money if we want to spend it. And on this Cal Poly thing, that's great, and I don't have any problem with staff coordinating with Cal Poly and soliciting their help or suggestions, whatever. That's a wonderful thing. That's a can't-lose thing. Frankly, I don't think anything's going to come out of it because we've tried it. We tried it from the inside, which it's always who you know. And we had someone on the committee who was an inside a veteran teacher, professor. Was he in the Natural Resources Department? Was he? So he was really on the inside. And it's not like Cal Poly is a forest school per se, but still, in the Natural Resource Department, they might be able to do good stuff. But when I asked staff to look into this, what I was hoping, perhaps I didn't make myself clear in terms of the guidance, was if you can search the job classifieds and questions as to part, but we need someone to be able to implement this plan. The plan has very specific tasks and for the protection and safety of the forest.
Let me clarify from my own point of view. This person would be an ongoing position. In other words, you wouldn't just work here for a year and set it up. It would be an ongoing type of job, is that?
Given the limitations of the budget, and that's why maybe someone part-time, the committee had talked about this, whether maybe be better off maybe someone just part-time, but how do we get someone part-time
What I meant was it isn't just a job where the guy would work here this year and set it up. It would be ongoing.
Maybe a woman.
Why?
Don't say guy.
Okay. Well, that applies, but I mean, we are talking in terms of a long-term commitment, as far as it's concerned.
That's what the plan calls for, and that would be the ideal.
Yeah. I've got one public comment. Shall I call that now, Rick Hawley?
Good afternoon. This is a real important topic for every citizen living in our community, and I think each of you that have spoke have touched upon some of those issues, and of course safety, fire safety is one, the health of the forest is another, and now that the CCSD is the largest property owner in the community, that should weigh heavy on your minds too. In terms of enforcement, the management plan doesn't address that issue at all because that's the county's purview, handing out permits for tree removal and they handle the replacement and all that type of thing. But it's an opportunity where the citizens of the community can have input through either a half-time position or a full-time position, and it doesn't even have to be a position that's under the overhead of the CCSD. It could be a contract position. You contract with a registered professional forester / forest ecologist, who, by the way, would not be a graduate student, although graduate students are great for planning, giving ideas. We've already done that. We've already planned this. And as Mr. Funky Blue said, it's been in the make since actually 1989. And the plan was adopted but new trees need to come up. We need to manage the understory. We need to give the community some confidence that you, our leaders, our body of knowledge here, will actually step forward and make the commitment. I know there's a lot of different things on your plate, and I think Mr. Funky Blue said it perfectly. You need to prioritize this. Should it come behind or in front of a lap pool? T- tennis courts. You know, how many citizens benefit from both those as opposed to a forest management plan where everyone benefits from it? That's something to seriously consider. It's not to say that lap pools and all the other things that the community wants is not important. It's who gets the most benefit. And each of us will benefit from the implementation of that forest management plan. You know, it's in place. We don't need someone to come and tell us how to implement it. But I do agree with what I think Tammy brought up and someone else, that we do need to present the board with a number of different options. And the Cambria Forest Committee is that body that can help the staff come up with those numbers and a path how to put this thing on the ground and get it going. And whether that's full-time, half-time, we could give you all sorts of different scenarios for your consideration. So I would urge you not to delay, put this off until the moratorium's lifted. That might be 5 years, it might be 10 years, maybe next year. We just don't know that. It's a moving target. The forest is not. It's here, we live in it. There's all sorts of things going on in there. You've also taken this, the real great step of going to the issue of how we do weed abatement, and I applaud you for that. That's a great step. That's kind of in the forest management plan. That's an ongoing issue that has to be done each year, training people. A registered forester / ecologist can take that on. Green Space does it with the help of the Cambria Fire Department and CDF. And I know that the fire department...
In place, just because the comments were made by Mr. Hawley about the tennis courts and the lap pool, just so that I don't get a bunch of emails tomorrow and next week. First of all, I'm happy to report to you next month. I will be bringing a status report on the tennis clubs and the tennis courts, and the tennis club will be present as well. That was a joint collaborative project wherein no CCSD money was spent. Those were per capita grant funds that were given to the district by state parks. The tennis club contributed just about as much money toward the project, and then, of course, the Coast Unified School District donated the property, okay, and some project management. And then as far as the lap pool is concerned, as I mentioned earlier, as did Michael Thompson, you know, that is a true grassroots community effort. The only thing that the district is involved in is my time in announcing that here at a public meeting and my staff taking a check at the front counter and holding it there for the committee members to come in and pick up. But there's no money being expended by the district for the lap pool issue, just so you're aware of that, and it's clear out there in the public.
Could I ask a question of our Art as a parliamentarian, perhaps? If we had adopted the forest management plan, is it now our job to do it? Is that what that meant?
I don't believe the action that day was to implement it. It was okay to approve it and accept it as the management plan for this district.
So who has the responsibility to implement it under those conditions, or where are we?
Well, impliedly, the district would have that responsibility. How and when they did it would be the decision of the board.
Okay, well, I'm thinking that is this something that we could integrate into the work of the fire department and in the interim period where I don't believe we have the money to hire somebody, because not only their salary, there's benefits and retirement that has to be put aside. It's hiring a long-term person is costly and could go for a contract, I'm sure. But at any rate, is that one way to begin thinking about it, that this responsibility would become something that the fire department has, and well, begin to assign some of the staff to that?
I think the questions and discussion, I don't want to speak for Tammy, but it's obvious that this needs either some more staff work or a work of a subcommittee of the board or an existing committee to come back with and answer your questions. What would be the duties of this individual? Mm-hmm. What is the current need? Where does it best fit into our organization? Those types of things.
He's been with us from the beginning, and he is in process right now of getting the students more. But I just wanted to say that last, our last committee, then I asked him, I said, Tim, are you going to stay with us to get us through this? And he assured us that he will work with us. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mr. President, yeah. I think District Council kind of capsulized things pretty well. We're sort of talking in circles here, and what I think we need is to have the staff develop some more information, some alternatives, maybe some funding sources, package it up and bring it back to us. I don't think we have enough information to make any decisions today, but I think we do need to make decisions in the very near term. We need to start something, so I'm suggesting that we direct staff to develop the alternatives, some potential funding sources, to meet with Cal Poly, and to bring back a report and perhaps some recommendations at the next meeting.
Would you willing to add to that, that it'd be an ad hoc committee of the board that puts the responsibility with us to do that?
Let me at least share what committees I think are working on pieces of this. Obviously, the Forest Committee is working on this, and their input possibly into the staff work would be important. The Open Space Subcommittee of PROS is working on this and how to coordinate it with the implementation of the build-out reduction plan. And we're kind of midstream on that. I'm a staff person to that effort. So those two are already doing it, and maybe Tammy has a suggestion.
I guess my suggestion is that you have a functional Forest Committee, and one of the things I was going to do, because I have the human resource background, is to get with them. I've actually been compiling a few position descriptions for foresters since Elon brought it up in July, and I came back to work. Anyway, I think all the recommendations are doable. It's Director Sanders' time frame by next month, and I'm not so certain of, just because I know what my schedule looks like. So if I could have a couple of meetings, I believe that I can fulfill the recommendations that he just described. Working with the Forest Committee, however, I will be attending their meetings to do that, get more familiar with it.
Yeah, November's fine with me.
Okay. Don, you were?
A volunteer basis with the skills and the input, with the blueprint that's already in the plan, so find ways in which to get around this and do the prioritization and then try to work out a schedule so that they can, we can possibly at least implement a good part of the recommendations. That's been going on now for several years, and the plan is there, and there's enough expertise or enough familiarity with it, I'm sure, within a number of different parts of it, that can be implemented very quickly with minimal cost, and I think that's a viable goal.
And I'd like to point out also that the build-out reduction program called for the use of some of the money received by the district for, based on a rate increase, to be able to manage the land that the district currently owns, and that could be a potential source. That money could become available after the fees are considered, after the first year, after the report comes back, and that could be a way of funding whatever this effort brings forth is what's needed and how soon.
Is that enough direction for staff? Is it good discussion? Thank you. Item D, this is Art Van Tandem.
I have the support of Tammy and Brian on the more technical questions on this particular item. It's something we have as staff worked on for a couple of years. And as Director Funky Blue has pointed out, we've gone back a couple decades in other items. This goes back over 30 years. Looking at some of the files the district maintains, the dispute out in the San Simeon Creek aquifer has gone on for at least 30-plus years and was identified in the original analysis of that basin when the district was considering purchasing the well field out there. It was originally a well field identified by the county, and with the district assuming the water distribution responsibilities in the 70s and early 80s, it took over that effort from the county and completed it and got the permits for diversion out in that particular area. One of the problems there was an existing well, which we call 9K1, still exists in the middle of the district well field. Through the well brought by the Warren Trust, and then finally a complaint with the State Water Board, which alleged they weren't being given the rights that they thought they deserved out there on our property. We argued and discussed this and shared information and actually took field trips out on the site, eventually decided not to go to the full-blown hearing at the State Water Board, but to work on a solution. That solution was suggested by Brian Bode, and I'm trying not to blame him, I'm trying to give him credit for this, because it provided the basis for us to build this agreement. And the other factual thing that occurred in this process is we acquired, independent of trying to solve this, the Molinari well, which exists near our spray field, and that well had been previously used on the Warren properties for irrigation purposes. So the whole concept of this agreement is to allow the Warren Trust to irrigate their lands in the San Simeon watershed with primarily water from the Molinari well. That well is not in our well field that we use for potable water. It is, we call it non-potable water, though it's very good water. We don't use it in our domestic system at all. We did have it tested with the agreement of a lab we both trust, and those tests proved that it would be usable for the purposes the Warrens want to use it upon their property for agricultural purposes. We've developed standards which are incorporated into this agreement, where our supply of water are to meet these standards in the future. Brian has looked at methods to transport the water in a way that we could blend water with our San Simeon water in case those standards are somehow threatened due to whatever factors at that time. So it'd be an easy fix, basically. We also had concerns about supplying water in the basin within which our well field is located. There's a schoolhouse property, and one of the things that happens in Cambria with me is when I'm looking into these things, I find out some history of Cambria, and I guess that schoolhouse had been there a very long time. I guess it's called the Home School, is that correct, or was it called something else? Not because people homeschooled there, I think that was just the school district at the time. The county actually has a map of the school districts at the turn of the century, and there was a school district there when kids could only walk to school. The school districts were very small. It is now a residence. 9K1 supplied water there, so there was a potable water need that's always the crop of discussion as far as setting the standards and the water needs. The agreement requires the district provide water over time, and that amount steps up over time, which is set forth in the agreement and also the staff report, starting at 75 acre feet and eventually capping at 183.5 acre feet of the non-potable Molinari water. And that's to allow Mr. Warren to establish his crops. That also gives us some cushion as far as any shortage of water in the basin, because that gives us a significant time frame within which to develop the desalinization plant in the same general area. That plant, according to one of the hydrologists that's been consulted, would certainly create more water for the Molinari well and for this purpose, and therefore we would never have a problem of shortage of water, not just for ourselves or Mr. Warren, but for the entire basin and the environments that exist in that area. We've looked at, through charts of the potential water use and the water that's in the basin, to ensure that there's enough water to be supplying these particular agreements even in the absence of the desalinization plant, and we believe there is. But in case there is a problem, we've identified three separate problem areas within which we are to work cooperatively together to solve and manage the problems in the water in the basin during those time frames. The first is a water shortage, and as any time we have a problem supplying the water, both sides can trigger a meeting, and where we sit down and try to identify the problem, how best to have enough water for the CCSD to supply its customers and enough water for the Warren Trust to be able to keep its crops established and not have the crops die. And we are to, in good faith, develop a basin management plan. If for whatever reason the water is in a significant drought and we still have a problem, then we can cut back the supplies, in at least the potable water, on a pro rata basis. In other words, if we reduce production out of the well field 20%, we can reduce delivery of potable water to the Warren properties 20%. Now, the non-potable waters are in a different area and are basically different waters, and that's replenished by the wastewater flows that go into that area, so that is less threatened. And in those areas, we also looked at the possibility of the water being polluted. There's current diversion permits into the basin and also violate state and federal law. So if for whatever reason the shortage of water in the basin, let's say, is an incidental take to species in the basin, then we can, which is a violation of state and or federal law, then we can reduce the supplies after meeting, conferring, and developing a water management plan. The beginning of our negotiations on this were fairly adversarial. I think we probably said bad things about each other in private and public all over the community. But as we went forward, I think, and Brian can attest to this since he was at the table at most times, I think we developed a feeling of trust. And currently, we are supplying water for a crop on the Warren property. And so he could, or they could, get established. Now it's not the avocados they envision in the future. And I think everything's going well with that. And so we feel that this agreement will set the stage for cooperation in the basin in the future. And it is complex. I have distributed in advance of today's meeting and today's agenda. So if you have any questions of any of us, we feel free to ask them, and we'll stand ready to answer any question you have.
Page 15, paragraph E. Got it?
Yes.
What is the sentence what does this mean? Damages shall not include the value of the water lost, but only the damages caused by the failure to have water delivered.
I added that into the agreement to limit the damages the district could be responsible for. I mean, I've involved with water agreements in the past where I think one in Pismo where somebody didn't get the deliveries of water they assumed. So the way they calculated damage is what's the value of acre feet of water, hired a water broker to come in and say it's X number per acre feet and that's my damage. I wanted to limit it to actual damage caused to loss of crops or trees. So even if you don't get any of your water, if somehow we truck water up there, somehow keep the trees alive and the crop comes in at the end of the growing season, then there's no damages. So it's actually a limitation.
Okay. I mean, I understood what you just said, but the clause damages caused by the failure to have water delivered, does he get profits?
Well, let's say that we completely breach the agreement. We shut off our well.
Settlement, because I know intimately how far apart we were, and I remember some of the words that were used by both parties to this agreement, and I think it's the greatest settlement since I've been here in terms of getting parties so divergent, and now on the cusp of settlement is unbelievable, and staff deserves the ultimate props, as we say in the ghetto. And Brian and you and Tammy and frankly Clyde Warren and his attorneys as well. It has been going on since what 80? How long? 30 years?
I think in the late 70s it was identified as a problem, and the fight began in the early 80s.
Yeah, not quite as long as the Israeli Palestinian dispute, but I put that on that kind of a level. I never thought this would ever get resolved short of a judge's decision. So, congratulations.
And I forgot to point out the letter that was distributed to the board, and I believe it's available to the public, which was sent to me today by the Warren Trust attorney, Russ McLaughlin, which talks about their wholehearted support and for this agreement and their pledge for cooperation to on both sides to get this done.
Art, if there's successors to the Warren Trust, will they just continue?
Yes. This will be recorded in the county recorder's office, and parts of it will become part of our permit. Our permit requires us to provide replacement water, and this agreement will be satisfaction of that replacement water requirement in our permit, and therefore parts of it will be enforceable by the state board. We did that on purpose for a lot of reasons, but we just wanted to make sure that it would exist in perpetuity.
All right. I think I understand the contract, and again, I want to add that about the creativity. I think that's more that you've all finally come up with a solution. You really, outside the box, was wonderful, and I think you all should be really pleased with yourselves. I guess a question, and this is probably naive, would it affect if everybody up the road starts wanting to grow avocados, will anything in this contract affect how that kind of, the water uses further up the creek?
This agreement by itself won't affect water uses up the creek.
There'd be some future time we might have an agreement like this with someone else up the creek.
We certainly would like to discuss it with them. I think if and when we get to a stage of talking about water management, there's other significant water users that impact us that we've talked to in the past, I think would be logical to have them at the table to discuss their needs also to make sure that we truly manage the basin.
Thank you very much.
Any other discussion? Yes, Brian.
Just make a couple of comments. One is this is really a win-win deal for the Warrens and the Canberra Community Services District, and that is that in the latter part of the year when we're the driest, we create a mound on our spray field down at the western end, and we develop a reverse gradient where the water can migrate towards our well field, and we don't want that to happen. So there are occasions when we have to turn on a well and dump it into Van Gordon Creek and just literally pretty much waste the water. This way, he's taken that burden and taken the burden off of us, and he gets to use the water. But not only that, he's not using direct potable water and using water that he can use for irrigating crops in a responsible manner, and it's a benefit for both of us. And actually, it's probably the biggest reclamation project that we've done and probably will ever do. I mean, to the tune of about almost 190 acre feet a year. And one other thing that will happen, as soon as the desal plant goes online, we'll even have more water down there. There'll be more building, there'll be, and a lot more water coming in. We'll let the creeks run longer. So I think it's a good deal. I think I can see in the future that we're going to have more water out there in that spray field, and it'd be a great boon to us to have somebody pull it out of there.
And we appreciate your compliments, but I also want to acknowledge the work of the field staff, of the water operators who have helped us with all of the technical details and just willing to get this thing accomplished and work hard to make it come to an end and what we consider to be a decent settlement. So we appreciate their work as well.
And I should specifically mention Jim Adams' help. He's been at a lot of the meetings and spent a lot of time out in the field with us, helping us get the information to do this.
All right.
So should we move the recommended action then?
I think this is the finest piece of work product we've ever been presented. It's excellent.
That's good.
All right. Second the motion.
All right. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? So carried. Thank you. Now, as we come to the end of our agenda, there's public comment. I have no request to speak. Seeing none, the meeting will adjourn to closed session.